Welcome back in to the David L. Gray Show, Off Code Unscripted on St. Dominic's Media. Glad to have you here. I was really done with this subject yesterday. You know, I came on yesterday and I put out a video where I did some original research. And I talked about, yeah, I know you guys were upset about the whole naked blue man and the Skittle people on stage. I know that the talking point is that it's the Last Supper, whatever that is. And so I say, you know what, I'm just going to not really talk about that and really feed into people's emotions and make them angry, but I'm just going to pull back some layers of this onion and talk about, okay, who's responsible for this? Who's the director of this whole thing? Who hired them? Who hired that person to hire them? Who's funding this whole thing? And so I came on Off Code Unscripted yesterday, and I demonstrated with evidence a 25-year plot in the making to make the French Olympics inclusive and diverse, make it gay. In fact, I demonstrated how these people, they've called this the Gay Olympics. Fine. And I wanted to leave it there. Right? So I got things to do this week. You know, we're headed out. We're on our way to the Olympics. Spent about 10 days there on Saturday, starting on Saturday. So, but I spoke it around the internet today on YouTube in particular. And I noticed that people just keep repeating the same stuff. There's nothing original being said. It's just a bunch of the same old recycling. Maybe they're throwing in maybe what the blue man said, and we'll get into that. They're getting into the apology. You know, we talked about that yesterday, but really there's nothing original here. It's just a bunch of playing on people's emotions. And you know, I said, you know what? I think my people are being gaslit. I think we're being gaslit. Once again, we're being gaslit, not just by Catholic and Protestant content creators and media people, but by the people, some of the people who was responsible, who were in that whole Olympics opening ceremony on that bridge. I mean, we're being gaslit. So I want to talk about that. I want to put some things in context today on this show. So this is David L. Gray Show, Off Code Unscripted. Hey, you know, it's getting cold outside. I mean, summer is almost over, I should say that. But it's never too late to get your rigid Catholic hoodie. You see, I got mine. Got the rigid Catholic hoodie on. You got to stay rigid, my friends. Got to stay rigid. But you don't have to get on a hoodie. You can get it on a t-shirt. You can get it on a stuffed animal, a bag, whatever you want to put it on. We'll put it on anything. Just hop over to stdominicsmedia.com, hop into our merch store, click on, we got two things in our shop now that we're selling. We got the What Would Jesus Not Do, which is the more theological correct question, right? I think some Protestants came up with this thing. What would Jesus do? Well, there's a lot of things that Jesus would do that you can't do, buddy, like ascending to heaven, dying for people's sins. So we came up with What Would Jesus Not Do? But this is our classic. Rigid Catholic. Got some slogans underneath. So check it out in our store. Hop over to stdominicsmedia.com. Appreciate your support. We got all types of books there. Also, we have membership. We send you free books every time we publish them, or we send you a free book as your gift if you become a monthly member. A Hound of Heaven is a lifetime member. That's when we send you all of our books we've ever published and will ever publish in the future. So check us out. This is the David L. Gray Show, Off Code Unscripted. Let's add some context. Let's talk about why are we being gaslit by a naked blue man. I just think this is just completely, completely crazy. So let's get into it. Yeah. So about that. You know, a few weeks ago, or maybe last week, I can't recall, all these videos sort of run together after a while. But remember, I was talking about the whole Republican Party thing and the Trump-Vance ticket. And I was talking about how, for the first time in history, the Republicans have given us the most anti-life ticket in the history of this country. And I talked about how this ticket of Trump and Vance is more anti-life than some Democrat tickets from the 80s and from the 70s, maybe even from the early 90s. Because you look at what they're talking about, it took all mention of pro-life off the Republican platform. Trump and Vance are for abortion. They're for the term limits. They're for the exceptions. They're for the abortion pill. They're for in vitro fertilization. Throwing a death penalty, which Republicans are always for, killing people. And it turns out this is completely anti-life. And I was talking about, you know, before Roe Wade, Republicans can kind of hide behind, you know, just talking pro-life. Like, yeah, I'm pro-life. I'm not going to do anything about it, but I'm pro-life. And we would give them our vote. We would just vote R straight down because of what they would say. But then as soon as Roe versus Wade fell, these people overnight became, they became talking about, oh, whoa, when can you kill a baby? They talk about these term limits or whatever immediately after Roe versus Wade. So they were fake. It was just like the whole gay marriage thing. As soon as that became the law, so to speak, they were all for it. They're fake. And so I was talking about that, how I think Catholics, conservative Catholics, I think we've become just like Black liberal women in the cities. You know, the Black liberal women in the cities who keep all the Democrats in power. And they just give them their vote without anything in return. They just vote straight D down. Nothing in return. They don't even ask for anything. When they do make a little noise, what do Democrats do? What, they throw them a bone? Right? Back in the 80s, we can't have a Black president, but here's Jesse Jackson. Here's Al Sharpton. You know, they throw them a bone, right? They make a little noise in the early 2000s. Here's a half Black, half white guy, Barack Obama with an African name. Take him. Get him back in line again. Get him back in line again. So this is how they kept Black liberal women in the cities voting for Democrats in the 99 percentile. They own their vote. They don't even count it. It's like spades. They don't even count the Black woman vote. They just know they're going to vote for Democrats. They own the vote. They take it for granted. They make a little noise. Oh, here's a Black woman married to a white man for Supreme Court. Oh, here's another one married to a Jew vice president. They just throw in bones, right? It's my fear that Catholics have become Black liberal women. Because what's going to happen, and I have no problem if you believe voting is your thing, you believe in the system, that, you know, fine, vote, whatever. But I'm like, you have to make your vote worth something. You have to make it valuable. It's like dating. Why should a guy marry you? Or why should a woman marry you? What do you have to offer? What are you holding back? I mean, if you're a woman, you're sleeping with a guy, you're cooking for him, you're washing his car, you're washing his clothes, whatever. Why should he get married? You give him everything. And it's the same with the vote. I think Catholics, conservative Catholics, are becoming Black liberal women, just giving the vote away. Fine, vote, but make it worth something. Make it valuable. Make them work for it. Because I think what's going to happen if Trump Vance should win, as long as there's no cheating, Trump should win for a third time in a row. But what's going to happen if Catholics just come out and vote without any want anything in return? What's going to happen is in 2028 and forever, you're really going to be Black liberal women. They're just going to assume you're going to vote for them because they've given us nothing whatsoever. Nothing, right? Another sign of being a Black liberal woman from a city is that people gaslight you. If you ask any Black liberal woman right now, what's Project 2025? She'll be able to run it down for you. They've been gaslit. They've been scared about something that's not even real. That's how you know you're being gaslit. They never gaslight you about something that's real. They always gaslight you about something that's fiction. Get you going, get you angry, tap into your emotions. And I think that's what's happened to Catholics with this whole, I don't know who did it. We'll get into that. But like overnight, we were told that this was an image of whatever a Last Supper is. I don't even theologically, I don't know what a Last Supper is. We'll get into that. But we were told that this image of these people on this bridge is about maybe 50 of them. It somehow represents 13 people in some sort of Leonardo da Vinci representation of the Passover meal. All
right.
Let me show you what gaslighting looks like. Here's a great example. Brian Kilmeade from Fox News. He went on, they did a show, I think Fox and Friends in the Morning, right? And he was talking about Kamala Harris. And I'll just let you just listen to this. Check this out.
Kamala Harris, number one, she has not had her record exploited heavily because people thought and marginalized her. Even in the Democratic Party, they said, wow, what a bad choice Joe Biden made. Number two is she hasn't sat down for an interview. When she sits down in an interview and says, do you want to defund ICE? Where do you stand on Medicare for all? Why didn't you show up? The most recent decision, already you got a question. She will not show up for the prime minister's joint session of Congress today. She'd rather address in the summer a sorority, a college sorority, like she can't get out of that. So that's her decision. And that's her decision to back up the protest.
Let me play that again.
Like she can't get out of that. So sorority, a college sorority, like she.
So. Someone somewhere decided to gaslight Black liberal women and tell them all that what Brian Kilmeade said right there was that Kamala Harris couldn't get out speaking to a colored, you know, what they used to call the social construct term back, you know, in the 50s or whatever, 40s. When were they calling Black folk? Where were they calling them? 50s, 40s, whatever. Which I thought actually think is a better term. I don't know. I don't it's weird. All the terms are weird. But they thought that he was saying colored. Right. And so immediately the Black liberal women were gaslit. Oh, Fox News. They're not going to be racist again. And somehow that got associated with Trump. Trump's a racist. Even though Brian Kilmeade said it, right? Clip two.
We were talking about why Kamala Harris would not choose to be behind Benjamin Netanyahu. She has an opportunity to look like a president, as a vice president, preside over a joint session of Congress. Instead, she went to give a speech to a sorority, to a college sorority. Somebody else thought I said a different word. So while I'm doing radio around 9:20, I start getting a bunch of text messages about what's going on online. And then I see Lawrence cut and pasted what you put up. And people thought I had a disparaging racial word instead of saying college sorority. So this ends up being this big thing. And it turns out the person who did it is head of the Washington Correspondents Association. And he's a Politico guy who does Playbook every day. I ended up speaking to him at the end of the day, and that conversation will remain private. But they walked it back. They corrected it. Said Kamala Harris is running. They were looking to label anyone, anytime, a racist, sexist, misogynist. I'm not.
But it was too late. If you ask any Black liberal woman now in the cities. All right. What did Brian Kilmeade say? Yeah, they said, he said Kamala Harris was speaking to a colored sorority. It's too late to walk it back. They were gaslit. Mission accomplished. So we have people out here who profit off of making us victims, gaslighting us, getting us angry. It's sort of a Marxist idea. If you have the power to get someone angry, that means you have power over them. You have power over their emotions. Then that means then because you have power over them, that means they'll look to you to calm them down, or they look to you to make them. What's the next thing that I should be angry about? Tell me. What's the next thing I should be angry about? I've talked about this for years. I've associated oftentimes with the Rad Trad Inc. You know, that association of Taylor Marshall and Michael Madden and Kennedy Hall, you know, that whole milieu, that whole group of people, right? Who every week they tell us what to be angry about. But it's not just them. It's everywhere. Liberals are better at it than conservatives, to be honest about it. Because they use this to win elections. Tell an old person you're going to take Social Security away. Remember this with Democrats, their old playbook. The Republicans are going to take away your Social Security. I mean, that's not even possible, right? So it's a whole thing. And I think that's what happened overnight with the whole Olympics thing. So let's get into that. That's part one. All right, for part two, I just want to be honest with you about a couple of things here. And some of what I'm going to say may make some people just a little bit uncomfortable. It may, right? All right, so here's the image again, all right, of a portion of what happened at the opening Olympic ceremony. Okay. And what I argued yesterday, what this was the Bacchanalia, this thing that started back in like 200 BC. These cults devoted to the pagan god Dionysus. These things had a bunch of revelry, a bunch of wine. It was festive. It was just really unchaste behavior, unrestrained behavior, a lot of sex, a lot of orgies, a lot of raping men and women. It was just gay, you know, and it was demonic. It was depraved behavior. Okay. And I thought that was a closer representation of what was going on versus, the Bacchanalia here versus what some people thought was Leonardo da Vinci's, his image of the Last Supper, right? So, and I really have this initial problem with that, because when you consider the Last Supper, I mean, there's just some mathematical problems, right? I mean, you look at this image versus, you know, Da Vinci's image of the Last Supper. Let me bring that up. I mean, there's just a mathematical problem. Right. I mean, you're talking about 12 people versus, I mean, what was on the stage? Like 30, 40 people. Right. So immediately there's just a mathematical problem. Here's one. I thought immediately just like just a mathematical problem. You know, 12, 13 versus, you know, 40, 50 people on a bridge. I was like, okay, all right. But then, you know, I kept looking at it, and then, you know, I really didn't understand the connection. You know, there's the mathematical issue. And then there's the issue of just the problem I have with the Da Vinci image itself. It's not accurate. It's fiction. It was never called... The last Passover meal with Jesus and his disciples was never called a Last Supper. I mean, it was a Passover meal, and it wasn't the last one. Jesus Christ said himself, when I eat this meal, when I celebrate, when I drink from this cup, when I eat this with you again, it will be at some point in time. I forget the actual verse. But he's talking about after the resurrection, and it was pointing to the Catholic Mass. So we know we celebrate the Passover meal with him in every Mass. So there's never such theologically, there's no such thing as the Last Supper. But the Passover meal was not at a table. There were not plates. They were not dressed this way. And to be honest, they were just a little more brown than what you see. So I've always considered Da Vinci's image sort of a mockery itself. It's fiction. It's not real. So I really didn't understand why. Like, I understood, right? I mean, I do get the connection people have with art and how art can be thought of to be real in our minds. But it's fiction. It's an image of, that's not even really close. You know, it's just not even close. Not even close in any sort of way, other than there being 13 people. I mean, that's just the honest truth. So, I mean, what are we mad about? What are we mad about? Are we mad about fiction? It's kind of like being mad at the Little Mermaid being depicted of not having red hair and light skin, or the elves in Middle Earth being brown. Like, what are we mad at? And it's a little embarrassing, I think, that we let people make us angry about things we should not be angry about. And Father Imbrato, you know, he's on the Off Code Unscripted last week, and I think he did a podcast where he was talking about, you know, it's amazing about the things that we want to get angry about. Like, this is making us angry. Like, this is the hill that we want to die on. Like, this is the hill that we want to die on. Like, this is really what's making us angry. Of all the things that are going on in the world that are real, that Christians and Catholics are actually dying, actually being persecuted for their faith, losing their life in parts of Africa, in China, in Honduras. Of all things we can get angry about, we're talking about a fictional image. It's a little bit embarrassing. I think we can do better. I don't think this is the hill we have to die on. I don't think this is the moment in time in the history of the world we have to express so much outrage, share so many posts, have all this righteous anger, this indignation. What are we talking about? An image? That's not even real? That's what we're angry about? That's what people want to tell us, make these videos. Oh, contact the IOC. I mean, Catholics around the world are suffering, not just through persecution, but just not fair wages. Not being allowed to have jobs in places like India. Again, losing their lives in Muslim countries. Yet the moment that Christians want to speak out and have this just universal outrage, this is it. And I'm not saying we can't do two things at one time, right? We can be mad about one thing and also mad about another. That's true. We don't have to focus all of our energies towards one thing. It doesn't just have to be babies in a womb. It can also be people on death row. It can be people suffering. It could be what Jesus said, the naked, the hungry, the imprisoned. We can counter Christ in many places. That's true. But it seems that our anger was just disproportionate here. Our outrage is disproportionate. But I think it's because, again, I think we've been gaslit. That's part two. Part three, I want to talk about evidence that we're being gaslit, not just by Catholic content creators and media agencies, but also by people themselves who are associated with this thing. All right, let me bring this up. I mean, this is just kind of weird, I think. So some people who are associated with the whole Olympics thing have, you know, spoken out. And it's interesting, some of the things that they had to say. Here is the Naked Blue Man. I think his name is Philip Catherine. And notice what he says here. I mean, this is how you know you're being gaslit. When he says, it wouldn't be fun if there were no controversy. Wouldn't it be boring if everyone agreed on the planet? So he's letting you know. People ask him, hey, man, what do you think about all this response from people who are saying that they felt offended by what you guys did on that bridge? And he says, it wouldn't be fun if there were no controversy. It's sort of like James Martin. You know, every time James Martin does something, you see it's for attention. Like he'll do the most outrageous thing, and you just know the guy's trying to gaslight you and get your attention. And hopefully I see more often that it doesn't work, that people don't fall for that whole thing James Martin does to try to get people's attention by doing something outrageous. Here's another one. So this is the guy who you saw on stage. I don't know if he's a transsexual or I think he's just a cross-dresser. And they're asking him about, what did you think about what was going on and all the negative reaction? He said, well, a lot of people had called me and they said, hey, man, that was pretty cool. You know, the representation, inclusiveness type of thing. But then he says this about the controversy. He says, art is always divisive. As long as it doesn't move people, it's not art for me. So again, this is about getting attention. This is all about gaslighting people. This is from the perspective, not from Thomas Jolly, who I talked about in the last show. For him, this is much deeper. This is an agenda they've been working on for over two decades. Just to create this thing that they're calling the French Gay Olympics. But from the artist's perspective, the people who were involved in this thing, this is about just getting some attention. Now, here's the last one I show you. Again, a bit embarrassing, I think. So the girl who was who looked like she was a DJ over, you know, the thing. She had the whole heart thing. So she's filed a complaint. Her name is DJ Barbara Bush. She participated in Open Olympics Paris ceremony. She announced Monday that she's filed a complaint for cyber harassment. She said on Instagram that she has been targeted of yet another cyberbullying, particularly violent since her performance. She's been threatened with death, torture, and rape. She is also targeted by numerous insults of an anti-Semitic, she says homophobic, sexphobic, and fatphobic nature. I didn't even know fat, like, who is scared of fat people? I don't, that's just a little bit weird for me. Like, I'm not, I didn't even know that was a thing. Like, you could be like, I'm scared of fat people. Like, why? Fat people are just kind of harmless, right? You just got to feed them for the most part, right? They come at you, hey, here's a donut. Like, who's scared of fat people? I used to be fat. I don't think anybody was scared of me. Give me a donut. I'll smile. Give me a donut today. Now, I don't eat bread anymore, but I'll still smile at a donut. I can't believe there's a word called fatphobic. That's funny to me. But she said fatphobic. I guess people are calling her fat, right? And she thinks people are scared of fat people for calling her fat. But she says herself, fat for her isn't like a word of shame. She calls fat an adjective. It's a state of being. I'm just fat. That's fine. She's a cute lady. Too bad she's weird. But she says, and so, but yeah, people, so this whole gaslighting thing, it always brings out the worst of people. When you bring out people's fears, you also, you know, you bring out their emotions. And sometimes one of their emotions is anger, is hate, is rage, is vengeance, is retaliation. It's pulling out a gun and trying to shoot a person's head off at a rally in Pennsylvania. You stir up people's emotions. You never know what you're going to get. That's what happens when you gaslight people. And so, you know, we've been gaslit. And so this feminine and this, the feminist and lesbian activist says she was extremely honored to have been able to participate in opening ceremonies and have her shared her vision of the party. So it's interesting that Thomas Jolly, when he's inviting all these people to come participate in this thing that he's doing, in particular, this episode on stage where they're reenacting the Bacchanalia and the festive aspect of it. He didn't tell anybody what his vision was. He had told a blue guy he wanted him to come and really just be naked. That's the blue guy, Catherine Phillip or something. That's his thing. He just likes being naked. He thinks that's a way to share joy and peace with the world. He likes to say that there will be peace in the world if everyone just walked around naked. First of all, because you can't have a gun. And everyone will see your gun if you're naked, right? So that's his vision. He didn't really tell him what this thing was about. He didn't really tell this you know, the chubby lady here. He didn't tell her, hey, come. No, you know, she's a well-known DJ. He said, I just want you to come on stage and act like you're DJing. The transgender person or cross-dresser or whatever they are. Hey, he says, hey, I just want you to come represent your community. So none of these people are like told, hey, I need you to come mock the Da Vinci's Last Supper. Everyone just thought they were participating in something that they thought they can add their thing to. And from their perspective, they're just here to get some attention, whether it's the NECA blue man, whether it's the transgender guy, whether it's the chubby girl here. She just want attention, right? She's a DJ. This is a great opportunity for her, right? So it's interesting to see like the different perspectives of the people involved on a nefarious level, the organizers, you know, the Thomas Kelly, the Altier Circle, those people I talked about, really nefarious, really dark, really demonic. And then see the weird people who are invited to participate in that darkness. And then see how this whole thing became an opportunity to gaslight Catholics and Protestants, to stir up their emotions of anger and hate. Some of them anger, hate, rage, violence, and things like that. And I just don't really want us to become Black American women. really, I don't want us to really just keep falling into these traps of being used and made to be victims and made to be powerless and made to depend on the people who tell us that we're victims. Because I don't think that there's nothing associated with that that has anything to do with our call to salvation. It really doesn't. I mean, our judgment day, God is going to ask us, hey, did you call the IOC and defend Da Vinci's image, fictional image of the Last Supper? That's not on our final report card. It's just not. And also, I just want us to focus our attention on those things that really matter. The Olympics are going to end in a few weeks. There's going to be maybe a weird closing ceremony. You can probably count on that. Those who use these opportunities to make us angry and everything like that, they'll come out again. You know, there's going to be something weird there. You're going to count on that. Hey, you should be angry at this. I want us to just stop falling for that type of stuff. I think it's fine for us to be angry, especially those things that are truly offensive to life. You know, Jesus Christ is life. He came to give us life, life abundant, life eternal. So I think those offenses against life are things that are worthy of our anger. And in a direct way, you know, this whole thing is what I talked about yesterday, this promotion, this idea that these weird behaviors, these depraved behaviors, these unrestrained behaviors with one's body, those are attacks on life. This whole Olympics thing that Thomas Jolly was involved with was just to make all that, was a continuation to make the whole Skittle lifestyle normal, right? So that is an attack on life. So yeah, we can be angry about that. But also we can be more angry at those things that are truly direct offenses against life, such as those things that are on the Trump-Vance platform, abortion, in vitro fertilization, the abortion pill, abortion up to so many weeks, all that stuff, killing people in prison. All that stuff we can also be angry about. We can also be angry about what's going on in Switzerland right now. These capsules that they just created, that you go into this capsule, and when you're ready to die, you push a button and it replaces oxygen with some sort of other gas. It only costs $20 to get into this capsule. I think we can be angry about that than the normalcy of that, because those death capsules are going to be everywhere pretty soon. We can also be angry about, again, the persecution and the murder of Christians and Catholics, burning down churches. We can be angry about that. Being angry about fictional arts and maybe something that didn't even represent it, just because it's easy for us to express outrage about. We just get on our keyboard or our phone and just, oh, this is bad, share an image. I think it's easy. Send a letter to the IOC, be happy about a fake apology. There's just some sort of media satisfaction also associated with us being angry. Oh, I was angry and I got satisfaction. Oh, I did something. I changed the world. Yeah, we don't direct those same energies in like going to a prison and having a Bible study or finding a priest to come with us to offer a mass. Or going down to a women's shelter for abused and women who had violence committed against them. Just doing something there, maybe painting a wall or donating or something like that. Like if it's easy, if it involves just a sharing on social media, maybe a click here and there, I think anger is easy. And we can sustain it a little bit longer, but when it involves like work, standing outside of an abortion mill, having conversations with people who we know are in hard places, just saying hi to somebody, especially a young person, as high as suicide rates are now, just trying to have conversations with people. Like true love is, I think, a little bit more difficult than anger and being angry about something. I think that's easy. True love, expressing that, being actively engaged and encountering people, I think it's a little more difficult, right? So, and it's a little bit, like I said, I think it's embarrassing. As I saw Elon Musk, he was like, oh, Christians are soft. You know, how dare you let these people offend you? And I get Elon Musk's perspective because he lost a son to the whole woke movement. By meaning lost a son, which means his son is just like psychologically dead to him. His son disowned him. His son is physically still alive. You know, he's so-called transgender. They don't have a relationship. So he considers his son dead. And so he has this whole vendetta against the whole wokeism. So I get his perspective. He's angry, right? But again, loving is hard. Like, try loving a child who's weird. I think that's hard. Loving them in spite of their weirdness. I just think we should do better, and we shouldn't fall for these traps and these tricks of gaslighting. I just think we can ascend to a higher state as Catholics, and we don't always have to be tricked by the world, and we don't have to let the world tell us we're angry. We have to be Black liberal women. They told Black liberal women, oh, you should be angry that Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben are on food boxes. You should be angry about that. We're going to take them off of those boxes for you, but we're going to leave Wendy from Wendy's, the sun-made raisin chick, the oatmeal guy. We're going to leave all these images of non-Black people on food, but you should be angry about Black people on food, right? I just don't want us to be Black liberal women. I just really don't. It's embarrassing, right? So I could go on and on about this. I really could. But I think I'll leave that for now. And I get to your comments, and then I'm out of here, and I catch you guys in the next one. I want you guys to keep camera. All right, that was really weird. All right, let me get to some of your comments here. Colin, I want you guys, before we get started, I want you guys, you know, Brianna, who is almost always here in our live stream, she almost is almost here for like the last 3 or 4 years. She had surgery. And she's well. She came out of surgery well. I just want us to pray for just her emotional health and things like that, and pray that she has a full recovery. So let's, for Brianna, our friend that's always here, let's pray a Hail Mary. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. And blessed Mother Mary, keep Brianna in your prayers and continue to pray that she is has all the blessings and graces she needs to be the woman that God has called her to be. And we entrust all these prayers to you in the name of your son, Jesus. Amen. All right, let me get back to calling here. See, maybe they are gaslighting, like throwing a bone to a dog. We must still pray for the sermon. That's true. Dominic's commenting. Yeah, it's really pretty interesting. Joe Biden, a lame duck. I don't even know how he's still president, right? I agree with the Republicans in saying if he's not well enough to run for re-election, like, why is he still in office? All right. Dominic says, doesn't it seem strange that the opening ceremonies has zero connection with the Olympic Stadium? Yeah, that's a point. That's a point. Yep. Colin says, man up. Take it on. Spiritual warfare is at hand. Ask for the sermon. Yvonne has the prayer hands. Yeah, pray for her. Keep Brianna in your prayers. She's a good friend. As you guys, you know, she's a sweetheart. She always has nice things to say. She's like one of the coolest people I've ever met. So. But she'll be fine. But I know some surgeries that people have are just like emotionally tough. It's not physically, it's more like emotional, right? So it's tough. Yvonne, that's a good point, Yvonne. Like, yeah, I'm just personally sick of everything being about a few crazy people. Yeah, isn't that crazy? It's like 1% of people get 99% of our attention. Like 1% of people get 99% of our attention. And that's, we have to stop that. Like the minority, I won't say the minority because sometimes the majority does have blind spots. Name the majority. It doesn't have to be the typical constructs we think about. It could be local. It could be in a prison, right? The majority of the people are the prisoners. The minority are the corrections officers, right? So I'm not saying you always have to, the majority isn't always the ones we should listen to. They're the ones that's always right. But sometimes we give too much power to a very small percent of people. And we make their problems all of our problem. So yeah, we do have to do a whole lot better. Hey, God bless you guys. This is David O. Gray Show, Off Code, Unscripted. I will catch you in the next one, whenever that is. But until then, until next time, remember Jesus loves you and is there for you. And live your life like salvation matters. God bless.